Hello and welcome to the KO Knockout Podcast. Today, we sit down with Nadia Karkar, General Counsel at TPG Growth and Rise. Growing up in the beautiful melting pot of Australia to immigrant parents, she was given two specific paths in life, medicine or law. While she may have ended up as General Counsel, her path was anything but simple. From law school to business school to Paris to Hong Kong, Nadia shares with us the challenges she's faced and the exciting series of events that led her to TPG.
We are here because as women in business, we don't want to walk alone on our path to success. We believe that by teaching and supporting one another, we can gain the knowledge we need and build a community where we belong. We are the Knockouts, women who champion other women and see every obstacle as an opportunity.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Weekly Knockout. Today, we have Nadia Karkar joining us from Palm Beach. Is that right? No, West... No. Palm Springs. Sorry, we're doing hotel venue searches in Palm Beach right now. So Palm Springs, either way, don't feel too sorry for her. She's living a very glamorous life and we're very jealous. But we want to welcome you to the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me, Lindsay. I don't know how glamorous it is. I've been in this house almost for 2 years riding out the pandemic, but I am very lucky. It's a lovely place to be and the weather is awesome. So hopefully we can do a fireside chat in person one day.
We certainly will. And I've threatened if I can't track you down to actually come visit you and work on your back porch. So that's the worst case scenario. But you're not one to stay too long in one place anyways, Nadia. So, and we'll find that out as we hear about your career journey. You're sort of constantly on the move, living really all over the world at this point. Is that right?
That is right. My husband was telling me actually maybe a year or so ago that every 4 or 5 years, I kind of get the itch to move somewhere else. So the good news is, at least for TPG, that I think California is the longest place that I've lived in for any one time, except my hometown of Australia. So we're doing well in California so far.
Let's start there. So you're from Australia. That's very exciting. You're the second Australian we've had join the podcast so far, but tell us, it's still exciting. We'd love to hear about it. So tell us about what it was like growing up there and how did you originally sort of get on this finance law track that you're on right now?
Sure. Well, I was born and bred in Australia, the child of immigrant parents. My dad came to Australia when he was 16, couldn't speak a word of English, worked in a factory, taught himself English, and actually managed to get himself a scholarship to law school in Australia. And so, that was sort of a part of his journey, which I guess kind of helped sort of inspire me and what I wanted to do. So I think I sort of ended up in law school a little bit by a process of elimination. You know, as a child of immigrant parents, you either become a doctor or a lawyer if you're going to be successful. I hated blood and was not so great on the science subjects. So I ended up kind of studying law at the University of Melbourne. And one thing has led to another, and here we are.
It's funny that you say that. We just spoke to one of your colleagues, actually, Neha Verma, who's also an immigrant, but or daughter of immigrant parents. She grew up in Connecticut. Her parents were from India, but she said literally the same words you just did, which is you're either going to be a doctor or a lawyer, right? And it's so funny because you're growing up in Australia. I'm sure your parents immigrated from a different location, but still that drive, that pressure that's on you even as a young child. Where did your parents immigrate from?
So my dad came from the Middle East and my mom had sort of Austrian and Croatian background. So I like to call myself a bit of a mongrel, but frankly, I mean, Australia is a country made up of immigrants. So it's a wonderful melting pot of nationalities.
That's fascinating. So you're on the road to be a high achiever from a very early age. And what is it about law and specifically, or how did you end up on that track?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, it was sort of a process of, an elimination by all respects. And, I went through 5 years of law school and frankly kind of got to the end of it and realized, actually, I'm not sure I want to be a lawyer. So in Australia, it's a little bit of a different process to the US, where you take the bar exam. You, in Australia, you sort of do what's called a year of articles. And I told my dad, I remember we were in Italy actually together, and I sat him down and said, I'm not going to do my articles because I don't want to be a lawyer. And he's like, okay, well, you know, very seriously, what do you want to do? You know, I've poured money into your education. Tell me what your plan is. And I'm like, I don't have one. And so I actually decided to take a gap year in Paris. And I spent a year learning the French language and also did sort of a 6-month internship at the OECD, and got to sort of experience what international relations and diplomacy is like. And again, a little bit by a process of elimination, I realized I didn't want to do that either. So now I'm having sort of another career crisis pretty early on in my journey. And that frankly led me back to business school, because I sort of thought, well, if I don't want to be a lawyer, what else can I do? Maybe business is the answer. And so I ended up at the University of Chicago doing my MBA there.
At this point, what is your dad saying to you?
Well, I have to say, you know, it led to quite a few acrimonious conversations. You know, obviously it's all water under the bridge now, but at the time it was he was not impressed. I think that I sort of made it up a little bit when I got into the University of Chicago and I was able to say, look, it's a good business school, you know, this is the right path. I did a summer at Lehman Brothers in 2007. And again, you know, when you're in business school, it's either kind of consulting or banking, and maybe a few other things. But I chose banking, and I got to the end of my summer and was like, gosh, I'm not sure I want to do this either. I'm really in trouble now. And so my then boyfriend, now husband, said, look, you know, you've got the law, you've got the business background, maybe you should think about corporate law. And, you know, my dad was a litigator, so I had never really had any exposure to mergers and acquisitions and private equity. So I sort of learned a little bit more about it and thought, okay, maybe this is actually something that, you know, I can do. And so I submitted a few resumes on big law firm websites and hoped for the best. And fast forward a year, the day I started at Weil in September 2008 was actually the day that Lehman Brothers went bust. And I found myself actually at the law firm that was representing Lehman Brothers in their bankruptcy. So as you can imagine, I felt very grateful that the stars had aligned and that I had found myself at the right firm at the right time. You know, very sadly, a number of our business school colleagues, you know, were out of jobs because banks were rescinding offers left, right, and center. So, you know, I had a very amazing experience in those sort of 2 years sort of post Lehman Brothers GFC crash.
So you're at Weil for a while, and ultimately you end up back on the business side. Take us from point A to point, I don't know, D, however that winding path happened, but you end up back kind of running a real estate business in Australia.
Yes. I think what I would say is that I've always struggled a little bit with being a generalist. You know, very early on, like even growing up, I was like, I was never going to be the Olympic gymnast or the, you know, concert pianist or the Nobel Prize winning physicist. Like I didn't have a burning passion to do any one thing. But I was good at a lot of different things. And so I think that kind of did lead me to trying lots of different things. And I actually remember, I think I was going through consulting interviews during my undergrad period, and I got to sort of the final round of a consulting interview, and the partner said to me, you know, one day you'll make a really great CEO, but I'm not sure you're going to make a really great analyst. I didn't get the job. And so I walked out of there, like, you know, blood drained from my face, being like, he thinks I'm going to be great in 20 years, but he thinks I'm absolutely like hopeless now. You know, what did I do so wrong? And, you know, it was sort of a defining moment in many ways, that it was like, I had to sort of, I guess, find a way to play to my strengths. You know, what was the thing that I was going to be good at? So fortunately enough, I did actually get the opportunity to be a CEO, perhaps a little bit earlier in my career than I expected, in an industry that frankly I knew nothing about, and I had very little preparation for. But it was a defining experience in many respects. You know, the firm had been around for about 70 years in Australia. It was still run by a group of partners that, you know, had been at the firm for, you know, some up to 40 years in duration. And so they were very passionate about what they were doing. And they knew that if they wanted to keep the company in the preeminent market position that it was, that they had to do something different. And so part of the reason to bring me in was to kind of really act as a change agent. And of course I was young and excited and sort of thought I had this change mandate. But I quickly realized when I got my foot in the door that you can't sort of be the bull in the china shop. And, you know, even if you can kind of see what improvements might need to be made to take a company to the next level, you actually really have to bring people along on the journey. And it was, you know, a lesson, frankly, that I think I learned the hard way. You know, there are always people in an organization that are absolutely chomping at the bit for change and they become your allies. But there's also a very large swath of people that you have to win over. And, you know, if I have any regrets, I think it's perhaps not being patient enough. So I'm trying to take those lessons and remember them as I now sort of start my new journey at TPG.
Sometimes you can't really learn those lessons in business school. You sort of have to learn them the hard way. So I don't know if it's a regret. It's just, it's a paid course that you got to take along the way.
I have definitely learned more in my career in practice than I did out of textbooks, that's for sure.
So following you around all over the world, you took a stop in Hong Kong, then you're in Australia, and now he's sort of saying to you, hey, let's do something I'm excited to do. And you guys move back to San Francisco and, you know, you don't have a job. You've just been on this whirlwind. So what do you do when you get back to San Francisco?
Yeah, it was definitely a whirlwind. And as you said, to his credit, he followed me around. And so I felt like the least I could do was repay the favor. And my husband's always been really into technology and startups. And so he wanted to live the San Francisco Silicon Valley dream. So we packed up and left Australia with no jobs. And we sort of thought we'll get to the US and we'll figure it out. You know, he was sort of interviewing with a bunch of startups and I was like, okay, well, if he's going to take that sort of more uncertain path, maybe I probably need to do something a little bit more stable. So I actually called up Weil and said, hey, do you remember me from my New York and Hong Kong days? I know it's been a while, but you know, I'd love to come back. And yeah, the firm has always been incredibly gracious and they had me back again. And so I sort of found my way back home in many respects was working in their Silicon Valley office for a period of time.
And you're doing private equity and M&A work, is that right? And somehow, I think you took a brief stop at another law firm. And I have to take steps because you've done so many interesting things. But taking one big leap forward, now you find yourself at TPG and you're more on the investing side. And that's just a fascinating transition. You've been on the legal side, you've run a company, now you're an investor. So tell us, you know, is this the dream job? Or, you know, how does this fit into the journey?
Well, I think what I would say is that sometimes these opportunities come when you least expect them. You know, post while I had actually moved to Kirkland because there'd been, you know, a group of partners that had sort of moved firms and I followed them. But I was very happy at the firm and I felt very supported and I'd sort of carved out a niche for myself. And so I was not looking for the next thing. And you know, I guess the lesson in this story is check your LinkedIn because people do reach out to you that way. And I did have a TPG recruiter actually send me a note on LinkedIn saying, hey, we have some positions open. Would you be interested in speaking to us? And, you know, but for the fact that, you know, she was actually employed by TPG, I probably would have ignored it. But I sort of thought, you know, what's the harm in having one conversation? And I very distinctly recall, you know, Missy sort of describing to me the TPG culture on that first call, you know, particularly the fact that the firm really leans into its family office heritage and it's much closer to that than sort of a big private equity or investment banking behemoth. And so that really piqued my interest more than anything else. And then I think coming back to that generalist sort of theme that I mentioned earlier, You know, when you're in private practice, you do have to specialize, you know, even in the M&A context. And I sort of thought that going in-house might be a way to kind of play to my strengths. So that sort of first conversation led to, I think I lost count by the end, but it was maybe 25 interviews later and an offer on, I think it was Christmas Eve 2020. So it was a nice way to end, you know, what was a pretty crazy year with the pandemic. And I've almost now been at TPG a year to the day.
What is about in this role, you know, you obviously have to be challenged, have to be interested in order for you to stay engaged. I mean, what is the challenge here? What's new that you haven't done before?
Yeah, I think for me, it's definitely around sort of the stakeholder management. You know, a byproduct of kind of leaning into that family office culture is the organization is very flat, which is fantastic, but there are a lot of stakeholders that need to be brought along on the journey for any given deal that we're doing. And actually, that's part of the job that I really enjoy, because it's sort of that people human element that you have to kind of lean into. So that's been part of it. And then I think kind of just learning about a whole host of new sectors. You know, I sort of look after the growth, rise and climate funds from a legal perspective internally at TPG. And so it sort of runs the gamut in terms of sectors that we look after, you know, everything from fast growing technology companies like the Spotify's and Ubers of tomorrow, all the way through to hospitals and schools in emerging markets. And so it really does run the gamut, and kind of learning about those sectors is something that has, you know, been a lot of fun, but also a challenge in my first year.
Are you excited to get back on the road at all? Are there any destinations now that the pandemic is easing that you haven't been to yet? I don't know, maybe some of these deals will take you across the world, but if not, just in your personal life, what, you know, where are you itching to explore?
Well, I think as a first order of priority, I haven't met a single soul at TPG yet in person.
Oh my goodness, are you serious?
So I definitely will be taking a trip to San Francisco sooner rather than later, which perhaps was not kind of the direction that you were going in with that question, Lindsay. You know, one of the things that I've really enjoyed about TPG is working with our Evercare Fund, which is our emerging markets healthcare platform. We have a lot of investments in Africa and South Asia. My husband's actually from Kenya, and so I would love to actually go and explore the assets that we have on the ground there and see what it actually takes to run a hospital in some of these markets where they just don't have the same kind of resources that we do here in the United States. And I guess, you know, spend a little bit more time with family as well.
Amazing. That sounds great. Well, tell us, you know, you have managed your journey in such an interesting way. Like, is there a mantra that guides you? Do you have principles or a saying that helps you kind of stay on track? And I guess one of the things I think is interesting is you're not afraid to take risks and make decisions. So how do you, how do you keep yourself on track when the world is such a wide open space for you?
So I would say two mantras. One, and I think about this a lot when I kind of get up early to exercise, it's, you know, it's not what you do on your best days, but it's what you do on your worst. And so I sort of take that to mean that, you know, you've got to chip away. And again, it's sort of a reminder to also be a little bit patient as well and not be too hard on yourself. And if you, you know, just put your sneakers on and you take that first step, it's kind of amazing, you know, what comes from that if you can do it every day. So that would be the first thing. And then the second thing, it's sort of a little bit driven by a book that I read, and I forget the authors, but the name is The Courage to Be Disliked. And the thesis of the book was really that, you know, you have to be able to say no. And I think that as a woman, and I've certainly found this in my life, you know, a lot of us are people pleasers and we want to say yes to everything, both in our personal and professional lives. And as I've gotten older and I think, you know, taken on more responsibilities in my career as well, you realize that, you know, you can't do everything and you have to prioritize and it's okay to say no. And if you can say no to the things that aren't important, it's amazing, you know, what time that frees up to focus on the things that really matter.
I'm going to close with, so what would your dad and your mom say about you today?
Well, I hope they're proud. I mean, I guess that that's, you know, what every child sort of strives for. But, you know, I think I'm lucky. I come from a family with, you know, a lot of love, and I think they just want me to be happy more than anything else.
I bet they're immensely proud of you. I think your story is amazing. So well done. This is amazing. Thank you so much for coming and sharing. And we hope after you go meet all your colleagues in San Francisco, we get a chance to meet you at some point along your journey as well.
I would love that. Thanks so much, Lindsay.
Thank you for joining us for this conversation with Nadia Karkar. Through a process of elimination, Nadia has found her passion. She's not afraid to take risks, uses the lessons she's learned to inspire others, and lives by the mantra, it's not what you do on your best days, it's what you do on your worst. Thanks for listening.